Well, I'd like to welcome you back once again to the Saturn Earth Connection with Michael in Maui. And this is, our website is helloearth.info, and today is February the 10th, 2009, and this is hour 77. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis, and hello to everyone out there.
Yes, there's a bunch of people listening to you now, Michael, and you can tell there's a lot of people catching up. And Keith writes, I'll just get right into this. Keith writes, as he's catching up with your recordings, he says, Michael remarked that remote viewing was considered a positive step in communicating with celestials. He also remarked on another podcast that those groups, aliens I presume, that are doing mischief, by which I think he refers to creating a hybrid race of humans, will be reined in. I wonder if Michael's familiar with one particular remote viewer, Courtney Brown, who wrote a book called Cosmic Voyage. In it, he relates remote viewing and speaking with Jesus on two separate occasions. When Jesus was asked about the same topic and whether we should cooperate with and willingly assist those so-called gray aliens who are allegedly conducting these operations, Jesus is said to have commanded that we must do so because, in Jesus' words, you will encounter no being not of my making. Could Michael comment on this?
Oh, sure. This is something that has perplexed a lot of people. You know, first of all, we're sort of an island, in an undiscovered island, you might say, in the galaxy and in the universe. However, one of the very first things that I was introduced to, as far as beings, were very strange. They were not at all what I would have considered intelligent, God-seeking and God-believing beings, and I was quite surprised. My question was continually, is this God, or are they gods? And of course, always the answer was no, but they believe in God. And they themselves wanted to give me an idea or in how they work their way, you might say, work their way in their belief to enrich it, to continually function within the society of the celestial society. And as I said before, we are essentially being groomed to interface with the celestial society, not the society of the celestials interfacing with us, although they do condescend. They do try to understand us, try to make their point in terms of trying to understand and relate to us. However, it always falls back to the point of why do you need to do things like that? And this is one of the points that was made by Tan, actually. This one of so many, but he was really the one who started the whole arrangement of getting in, you know. Actually, Nella was the one who was inviting me in to learn about it. Now, you've got to remember that in the political, exopolitical regime, or the way of doing things, there were those whose belief excluded God, and these are the ones who biblically are referred to as the angels of heaven that fell in their belief and service to God. And essentially, they continued their way to producing a variant of the sentient beings, who was not necessarily a believer in God. One of the most important things was the thought adjuster endowment to the human race. The human race is one of the races that, as far as the only race on Earth, let's talk about it on just planet Earth, that is endowed with a thought adjuster. A thought adjuster, the fragment of God, fits, is enthroned within the human genome, the human consciousness and the human spirit, and merges with it through various stages that actually start at a very primal level. The primal level being one in which you might say has to do with just becoming aware, looking around, seeing with eyes, and then exploring the physical surroundings, and then becoming more and more intrigued by the exploration and movement within that that arrangement, and your youthful experience, and my youthful experience was, exploring things around and being very, very intrigued by little creatures and animals and moving on. These adjutants of mind, you mean, standing in for God, these spiritual motivators. Brings our consciousness together to discover more and more of those things, all in the same time building a relationship to the thought adjuster. The thought adjuster being essentially pre-personal, not having a personality that can be bridged across, just saying, hey, thought adjuster, how are you today? Nothing like that, but much more living together in the same body, but having this drive to know truth, to find more. And this is the interesting place where some genetic experience by one Lucifer was to remove that position and place pure logic in front of it, and essentially block it off. In other words, through choice, through being able to be convinced by logical choice, and these sometimes have to do with just what do you need, you know? I need something to sustain my body, or I just need something to enjoy and look at, or I need something to be able to have power over the animals of the field, or even my fellow man. You know, these kinds of base desires that were more important than actually knowing and seeking and becoming connected to the thought adjuster or the God fragment within us, and as a result becoming truly a divine instrument of expression, as of divine expression on a very unique basis. In other words, having a soul that is divine in its origin and animal in its beginnings, and from that point having a unique structure. But this uniqueness was tampered with in tried to be manipulated by it, somewhat curious. This particular endowment that we have is sometimes a mystery to some of these others who were moved by other motives that were more self-centered, more centered against the individual versus the divine. As a result, there's this curiosity that goes on more than that. There's this, if I could take away what they have, then we could become like they. What is interesting is one of the very first things that sitting with Dana, a high teacher of the universe, high son of God, taught me that this thought adjuster in gift or actually more than that, it's a bestowal of a divine fragment of God, is not given to every creature in the universe. Some do not have it. Even the Urantia book does say that there are some beings that do not have a bestowed thought adjuster who, at a point in time and at a point in gradual and you might say step by step, become merged with and at one point become literally fused with. However, there are those who will never have that opportunity because it just does not work with them. And this is a curiosity to some of these. And our form is a very special form. It is one which has that interesting ability. Although we may not be the most intelligent, we may not be the most powerfully intellectual or powerfully spiritual, having powerful gifts of interfacing with the fabric of reality that brings about transdimensional awareness, like remote viewing, like precognition, like even working with a bit of being able to move some things around. And I've practiced with all of those things, and they all function. We could all function with them, but much of the time what we end up doing is if we don't remember things very well, then we write things down. And today, instead of doing that, we've got computers, and we've become actually very brilliant because of our interface with our own machines. Our computers have rapidly caused us to rise far above those who are naturally endowed with higher intelligences. Much of that having to do with only things like better memory, longer chain thoughts that can be continued. That's only the only thing we're ever able to overcome those things by our own little tricks and devices that we led to develop by just curiosity or by actual intense desire, perhaps being led to by the thought adjuster himself within an individual. So, there is a wonderful splendor about our planet Earth because of what we are in. I remember going to the one of the first things you see, I guess for comfort's sake, was a garden view in the New Jerusalem, which was basically a park in the sky, like a Central Park or something like that, in the New Jerusalem. And it was a composite of what you can find on Earth. However, it wasn't as splendid as what I'm on Maui, the island of Maui, which is, it's really neat. It's got all kinds of things, all wrapped up in one little island. And what I saw there was some of this nature, life forms. Of course, later introduced to sentient and intelligent life forms, God-seeking life forms, but much about that later. But right now, I just want to make the point that our planet has a lot of special life that appears nowhere else in the universe because of its unique ability to have been a life experiment planet, and retains that title also right now. But it was a problem trying to stop the experimentation. So that's what is going on. There's some people that you might say of celestial origin that still want to make their experiments.
When you were in that in the garden at the New Jerusalem, did you think it was not necessarily a nature garden, but more of a museum of nature?
Somewhat, yes. It seemed more like samples and laid out nicely, but not necessarily in the way we would lay out a garden.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, we tend to lay out gardens for appreciation, for viewpoint, ways to walk around it. It seemed more like one to observe from the outside, look into, not one to walk within.
Okay.
Yeah.
And about Keith's question when he talked about the hybrid race of humans.
Yes.
He thinks that they could be reined in, either possibly as a king or queen, or...
Well, these who have been experimenting and is not supposed to be doing that experiment, they got to, you know, like a halt is supposed to have been done, and to a certain degree, they wanted to continue their expansion of their knowledge and, you know, to learn about it. Urantia is one of the planets that is filled with interesting things in terms of life.
Right. All right, well, we could move on to what Nicola asked. He's also asking about New Jerusalem also. Does the New Jerusalem have trans-dimensional capabilities, like the smaller ships do?
Well, let me just comment on what I was shown. First of all, in the arrival at Saturn, from the viewing point, which the same place where I viewed the escape from Earth and, you know, the escape or the move away from the moon, then realizing I was really in space. And the next point of being able to visibly see anything was at Saturn. And at that point, they pointed out to me the destination, which I said, "You mean that light bulb thing out there?" And that's what I saw. And then, of course, I've described it before. As we came in close, there was no texture to it. It was very luminous, and I thought it was going to crash right into it, and we went right in through that luminous field, and right on, and later landed. In leaving, it was strange in the sense that when they allowed me, you know, this opaque place became transparent again and I could see out again, they showed me a moon. And I asked them a question. I said, "Is the New Jerusalem hiding in the moon, or was it the moon?" And there wasn't a definite answer to it, because I wasn't quite asking the right questions, I guess, that they could understand. At that point, I think they were pointing, also they were pointing out to me the location of, it wasn't Tana, no, it was one of the operator of the vessel, the shuttlecraft vessel, pointing out where he came from, which was, he pointed out an area right around where I immediately recognized as the constellation of Orion. And he didn't exactly say it was in Orion's belt, but it's a, he pointed at an area very close by. But anyway, forgot exactly where it was. But the definite answer of being trans-dimensional and being able to become something else, I suspect it was able to do things that may make it seem to be a moon, or it could hide behind a moon or something, because that's what they let me see. I didn't see the New Jerusalem again in its luminous fashion. It showed me the moon, a moon. So I can't actually answer that question definitively.
So when you were leaving the band of New Jerusalem, you couldn't, as you looked back, you saw a moon, or you never saw the sphere again?
I never saw the sphere again, but they wanted me to see that moon.
And how did you think you came out of the moon?
Well, I asked them, did we come out of that moon? I mean, I know we didn't go into that moon, you know. And the answer is a curiosity, you might say. A challenge for me to kind of wonder about. And if you talk about transdimensional, being able to move, perhaps that moon is only a hollow shell. And the New Jerusalem went ahead and parked itself inside. I don't know.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, so really they left something hanging with
them. Yeah, yeah. I actually came up with the thought, and I said in my thought, was, you mean we were in that moon, and that's where we really were? And it wasn't quite answered out. Yes, but you know, I think there's some things going on there that it is able to do. I'm not sure exactly why they showed me the moon, but they made it very clear for me to see that moon.
So when you saw the moon, did it look like you were right on top of it, like you just exited the moon?
Yeah, it was pretty big. I mean, it also showed cratering, you know, texture, gave me the impression that, aha, it's the moon. Were we in there, you know?
So it's possible that the New Jerusalem literally is hiding inside of an artificial moon around Saturn?
It's a possibility. I cannot say that it's a fact. But it could be a way in which they shield themselves when necessary from some possible problems that may occur.
So it's sort of like moon camouflage?
Moon camouflage or moon armament or something. I don't know. It's something that I, you know, everybody could speculate, you know, about that.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing that, knowing their technology and knowing what they have there, and this concept of continual growth that they have, I don't think their moons are continually growing. In fact, I know that they are, you know, only expanding at the rate that the universe does. You know, so we'll never know that they're changing in size. But the New Jerusalem is. So, just given that, if it were to fit right inside a hollow position, I don't think they'd be able to fit in there, you know, over time.
Different times you've mentioned different sizes you thought this New Jerusalem was. At one point you said it's as big as Hawaii. Do you mean the Big Island is Hawaii, or?
No, the state of Hawaii.
Well, the state of Hawaii is like 1,000 miles long.
No, it's not.
Well, on my National Geographic map, it shows 132 islands.
Yeah, well, that's the whole length of even the islands to
you're referring
northwest.
To the major islands, Hawaii.
Yeah, that's like islands. I'm talking about that. It's just a,
mm-hmm. Well, that's huge as it is.
Yeah, that's pretty far. What I was using was a clear day on the top of Haleakala, visually to see how far we could see. And since I was shown the interior of the New Jerusalem, which is just a very expansive open space, and wasn't able to see the far side wall, it gave me maybe I should think about how far can you see in clear atmosphere, clear air. I could see easily to Big Island, Hawaii, and occasionally in top of the clock could probably see, or have seen, Oahu, you know. So.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, I used to see Bay Island from Oahu.
Yeah, that's fairly easy.
Mm-hmm.
And, on some occasions I was actually able to see Kauai, so.
I've seen the Big Island from Oahu, and I just couldn't believe how far I could see.
Yeah.
It was so clear that day.
Yeah. So given the idea that if we just use that as basically a way of ranging the distance visually, that was the way I was kind of estimating. Although the interior curve, the interior wall, looking at it, it was very, very expansive. And you see it off in the distance just, you know, becoming very, very distant, and the texture is just becoming very hazy.
Mm-hmm.
When I look close by, I mean, I could see what appeared to be window structures, like places where people could dwell, and that's what I asked. Is that where people live? And or they didn't know what I mean by people living in there. Yeah. Really.
They were on telepathy. They still couldn't understand.
They didn't understand because I was using those kinds of words, living, and everything was living to them.
Nice.
Yeah. So like using a. Like being in New York and saying, you know, I want to go to New York, and you're in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you're in the city of New York, and you say, I want to be in New York, and you're like, where do you want to go? I want to go to New York. You know, you're in New York.
Yeah,
it's sort of like that kind of a impression I got from them. So I had to, what goes on inside are those windows and, I mean, those openings and things like that. Are there people like you in there? And it says, oh, yeah.
So in other words, you're saying the New Jerusalem could be 300-400 miles in diameter?
Perhaps, easily.
So if it's that size, could you speculate on how much growth it would have in a day?
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting idea, because if the rate remains the same, then it'll grow much, much more rapidly after a while. And its size would be able to contain a lot more. And what it is, in my opinion, is not a temple. So there's a lot of people who think that the New Jerusalem is a temple, but it's more than that. It's a spaceport. It operates as a spaceport, and there's a lot of things that go on in terms of it being like a city also, where cultures intermix and intermingle, and as well as having distinct areas where, I guess, different, you know, you might say this section is for the Dorian group, and that's for the other guys, the gray guys or the little guys. They have this, you know, massive section over here. There's just a lot of things going on, and there's a lot of space, and it's able to accommodate a lot of people. And the landing deck, or the deck in which the gigantic V-wing craft was in, was huge. It was expansive, and far bigger than, you know, just like LAX. Oh, well, you know. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, they don't need the landing strip, though. They just need to find a place to put things, like the craft.
It just hovers in the possession.
Yeah. But I suspect that some of the craft are also merged together with the New Jerusalem. There's been many times that people have seen crafts that sort of merge into one and go out and then disappear. Or they see one UFO craft and it breaks apart into pieces, and then and they go every which way, and then they come back into one, and then they disappear. Well, I suspect that too, because of the area they were showing me, which was my space. They just said they were making for, you know, me. One like it, they said, and it looked like the inside of a dish-shaped craft. So I suspected that, you know, it just would be one that just merged in and then can detach and things like that.
So the outside of this New Jerusalem, you said it was growing, so in my mind I think of something, some plant life that it can grow.
Yeah, that's like, exactly what I
like bamboo grows so fast.
Yeah, well, like a tree, I said, like a plant or like a tree grows, and it says no. And then they went to show me how it works, and then it basically is controlled from the outside, and it's nanobit, crystalline structure that they layer out and actually implant and renews itself, and using some kind of technology that I don't even know how it works. And of course, at the time, you know, there wasn't any LCD screens that I could even think about, liquid crystal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, everything to me at the time was, you know, hammered and forged, or, you know, laid up, or masonry work, or something like that. No, everything, they were controlling it from one operator was building this section, and it was demonstrated to me. Because of the Dano instructing my consciousness to start to think and try to absorb what was happening, which was, how is this place constructed? What is made out of? Why is everything looking so new? Why aren't there any straight edges? Things like that.
Crystalline structure?
Crystalline structure and like waves of energy that order the structure to the way they want it to look. And as a result, they don't create art like we can create art or sculpture. And it's not quite that made that way. You know, we have we actually take the time out to go ahead and sculpture in, you know, something out of, hue it in a rock or something.
When you say these celestial beings made this New Jerusalem, was the New Jerusalem made with their computers? Was crystalline structure to get it going? Or was it somehow made with their hands? Because if they made it with their hands, we could make it with our hands.
Exactly. No, what I got was it was not made by their hands.
We assemble aircraft by hand.
There's nothing going on that I saw there that was fabricated in the methods that I could understand. You know, even assembling electronic components and stuff like that. You know, each component has a little purpose. And, you know, fabricate a circuit. Next thing you know, you got a little radio. But their function, the way they put things together, is very different. You might say its organization is close to life, but from the opposite direction. This is the simplest way that they put it to me. It says cells are instructed from within, and we know that by, you know, just looking at the fact that chromosomes, DNA, and basically hold a lot of the keys to, you know, bringing about living machines, living structures. But if you were to look at it, their living structures from another vantage point, where the instruction is not given from each cell within, but to the crystalline structure from the outside. So you might say nanobits are being put together. The closest thing I can come to that is in our modern 3D rendering. I mean, when we took the power of the computer and able to locate a bit in virtual dimensions within you know, software, and construct a virtual, let's say, a virtual moving picture of Jurassic Park, let's say. It took a lot of computing power to instruct that one little bit of a pixel to be in the right position at the right time and be able to turn and move according to the instruction, calculating all that math. Well, basically, you might say taking that except in a virtual sense within the computer itself, only within its the virtual domain, they're able to express it on an external way and place that little crystal bit in an external computed position. And that's the amazing thing, and do it layer by layer.
Yes, yeah, well, it is amazing, but you and I and a lot of people now are those pixels. And now we can look at right down to the bits in our computer.
Right.
So it would have been interesting if they could have given you, let's say, some super magnification.
Oh, they kind of did.
Oh, they did?
they did it telepathically, where they just let you see it in your mind.
In your mind?
Up close, yeah.
So
they project the image into your mind that you can comprehend its structure.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And what does the structure look like?
Okay. Now we get into the vision that I had on Saturday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well,
it was.
We wrote about this, but go ahead.
Yeah. They use this kind of structure, crystalline structure, and map it are able to map it across whatever way they want to build from an external source. Saturday in the morning, I noticed I had a very, very clear image in my mind. One so clear that it reminded me of the crystalline structure of some material, well-organized material, perhaps metal, you might say. It was a matrix of what looked like dog bones shaped items, all exactly the same size, all lined up floating in space, you might say, having a position which could be given equal distance spacing and having perfect alignment one to another, vertical and horizontal. And I was able to move into and zoom in and move around within that space, and it reminded me very much of a crystalline structure or a crystalline structure of some metal or something, but I wasn't sure what it was. But then another thing was interesting about this reminder of the structure was this: there was an area which was out of phase, you might say, not in alignment. And it was only one piece. I almost wanted to go over there and turn it, but of course, since I was only viewing it, I couldn't turn it to put it in the right position, you know, make it like all the rest. It was just one piece. And then I wondered about it because it was so clear and so virtual. It's very hard to imagine something like that. It was very, very clear. It's like looking at a, you know, very powerful 3D image, X, Y, and Z, movable around, very highly detailed, and asked about that one, what it was, and it says it's like a timekeeper.
Are you referring to the one that was out of place?
Yeah, all of them have fallen in place, and there's one left to go.
Just hasn't moved into place, you mean?
Not, it's moving into place now.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so as far as this particular vision this past Saturday was one that is trying to express the urgency of those who hear my voice to continue to build your relationship with your thought adjuster, who is going to give you a your personal guidance, you might say, in the time of that alignment of that little last piece that needs to come into correct alignment, you know, spacing. So. Although it was like, it reminded me very much of that crystalline structure and how they showed me the composite of their structure in a very, you might say, almost at the molecular level. But this was at this was a vision this past Saturday of that. So since they did it to me before, in explanation of one thing they could do, it was that same thing again, and trying to get a message through, which is understanding how close we are in terms of all the pieces falling together.
All the pieces falling together in this whole picture here?
In our picture, in our project, right? The timetables that are moving, we're moving into.
I say, so that's... So this was a waking vision?
It was, yeah. But actually, my eyes were closed, and I decided to see how clear it was with my eyes open. And when I opened my eyes, it rapidly disappeared.
And I suppose you closed your eyes again?
Yeah, and it was gone.
It was gone. Sort of like a dream in a way?
Yeah, but it wasn't a dream. Because it's, you know, it's just that... The interface between into my optical centers were set up to be overridden by my, you know, my own eyes. In other words, I wasn't, you know, so that you kind of go crazy, you know, if that see things.
I guess so.
Yeah.
You said it gave you the feeling it was like a cloud.
No, I asked what it was, you know. Says it's a clock. It's a countdown.
They said it's a countdown.
Yeah. And everything's counted down already.
And this last piece was that falling out of place? Or?
No, I think I can't say. It was just out of place, you know. Out of place, or was it falling into place?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everything was static. Nothing was moving. I could move about within it, but zoom in and out on into it and move about within the matrix, but not necessarily manipulate anything or watch any movement, because there didn't seem to be any movement. It was static. Yet it was, in terms of a timetable, many things have already been set into place.
If we have the ability to have a computer that would equal their alien computer and be able to construct this crystalline structure, what simple thing could we build that would, a crystal radio, or what crude thing could we build with this?
Well, the first crude thing you'd probably be able to make is some kind of shell, or that's what my first thought is that a structure like a shell or a casing. What goes within it is another project altogether, and how do you do that? We've got to look at those mysteries, try to catch up to that on our own pace.
Well, you said everything was made of this crystal structure. Then could we make some kind of alien golf cart? Something that would be totally different than what we would have, but it would be something we could make with our computer.
With our own computer using their technology, if you do some research on where we are in nanotechnology, we're heading toward that point where nanobits are being able to be thought of not only in terms of nanomachines, tiny little machines, but nanostructures, which actually build much greater and larger structures. Except right now, it's much easier to use the mechanisms of industry, present-day industry, and going by microscopically manipulating pieces to create a structure. Well, I think, one of the things that I think we could probably do, we would probably do in the beginning, would be create art. And it, because it would be so unique in what it could be, what would be looking like. Like when you first played with holograms, gave it to the first guys who started playing around, and they became holographic artists. You ever remember those laser light shows with holographic representations of light?
Yeah.
Laser, what did it do with the laser? Oh, well, there's one bunch that went underground and you never knew what they were doing, and they were making weapons, and another bunch that was out there in the open expressing art and making the clouds look weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, do you think that they would, I hate to use the word give us the technology, but are we going to earn this technology from them?
Of course. Everything we have is not a true invention. It has always already been made, but we seem to always rediscover it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is always fascinating to hear about the naturism sphere and the fact that it's getting larger and it's growing, but it's not alive. Or did you say it is alive?
Alive?
Yes.
It's a form of what we might consider alive, but it's not. To them, it's a type of technology.
But to them, it's alive.
And it's at that level of complexity and mystery, you might say.
Well, I mean, we could say the same thing about a tree, or a tree is alive. And
yeah, but you know, it's sort of like the gardeners that can, you know, create a tree a certain way and bend its branches a certain way, and it's still a tree, though.
I know, but when you hold a seed in your hand and you say, "Oh, this is like a time machine. It takes moisture and sunlight to release it into action," and this can become a tree that weighs tons, that all produces itself.
That's amazing, yo.
Yes.
It's amazing, the instruction within it. But there is also external energies I gave us a little bit of hint on that, how we can manipulate or become a conduit of these energies to supercharge the seed. So it, you know, does really nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Aloha was good at that.
Yeah,
in a kind of breathing life energy, or the breath of God, you might say, breathing life into it through him, through his own desire for it to do well in his garden. And it always showed that result, remarkable result. But today we're doing other stuff, like Roundup Ready stuff, which is all this genetically modified organism stuff. Thank you, Monsanto Corporation.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they have a plan that is not on our agenda, but it's on theirs.
It's exactly on their agenda. Not the best or most healthy thing, but it can cause problems.
Yes, we have a 2012 question. Michael writes, Dear Michael, will the children that will be born after December 21st, 2012 be special in any way because of this global awakening going to happen?
The world that they'll be brought up in will have a newer level, a higher level, and they themselves will possess a higher, more evolved, you might say, being. This is already happening, and it's always remarkable to see the level of which these new generations are moving into life, in their awareness, in their abilities, and to be able to structure a much better world. The old things are going to pass away. It was ways that may have been necessary at one point in time or another, and this new generation of mortals on their moving toward their new destiny, their same destiny, will have actually much more fruitful and abundant life offered to them, and they themselves genetically believe will have higher pre-installed, or pre-switched on operation. Presently, we move into this level little at a time, through the aid of our thought adjuster and Holy Spirit, or the spirit of God, the breath of God, Aloha, that moves within us, and it helps to turn on these various facets of knowledge and knowing, and interface and communication with the divine web, you might say, the divine web that's not just worldwide, but a universe-wide web of knowing. And that'll be much more easier to connect to by this new generation. So there is some talk about this level of different kinds of kids coming in, and Wago with indigo children, and then crystal kids, and all this stuff. Just names for the level of consciousness that is moving into the vehicles that is the we call our bodies, and their growth, the way they grow and move in into the domain in which we present ourselves, we live. That is going to be uplifted also, yes.
Well, I wanted to tell you that those NASA links that were broken.
Yeah.
Well, I believe they're still broken, but I noticed next to the image of the light bulb.
Yeah.
There is a another link there that is not doesn't connect to the NASA page, but it connects to another NASA full resolution image of the light bulb image. And the ones before that have that high resolution, that still works, but the other pages don't. The NASA.
The raw images pages were redone, or they were eliminated, a whole bunch of them.
Yes, they're still working.
Oh, the raw images?
Yes, the raw image was that image from the 24th of May, 2006.
Oh, I see.
When they switched to a telephoto lens and took that close-up picture.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to, since you're talking about, I'd like to point out this factor that is in that shot. There are three shots there. There's one with a donut before the zoom in,
yeah.
A donut of light,
mm-hmm.
And one right before that, on the upper left-hand side of that shot, you see a streaking image. All the stars are points, except this one that looks like a dashed line.
Mm-hmm.
And in the next shot, it is gone from the upper left-hand corner. And in the exact, if you were to draw a line from that, it extend that streaking line, that dashed line, it would end up in that donut of light. So you would, what I say has that is a demonstration of the level of the transport. It's actually moving into another dimensional transition so that it can move much faster than light, actually. And in moving in that way, they create that donut of light. And it's captured on the optical images from NASA. Thank you, Cassini.
Thank you, Cassini.
And it is continually collecting. We are continually collecting more and more people. These people, you might say, extraterrestrial, or what I like to call them is celestial, because the celestials represent those who did not fall from grace, from God's from God's kingdom, you might say. They're all gathering right now, and there's the immensity of this place, the New Jerusalem, is able to surely hold, you know, tens of hundreds of thousands, easily hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of these extraterrestrials. They are coming for this grand awakening that is coming up. You know, I mean, if they all decided to jump in their little hot rods and come over here, there'll be a big wave of that Mexico flap look like nothing, you know.
Well, I'm glad they're getting ready.
Well, yeah, they're coming from everywhere. So.
And there goes our hour.
Oh. Okay, so, aloha.
We will pick this up again next week. Let's say aloha, Michael.
Aloha to all.
Aloha.